While he was on earth, Jesus gave very great and precious promises to his disciples, promises that believers throughout the ages have found to be faithful and true. And he gave these out of his great love for us. We started talking about some of these last week, so today is a promising new year, part two. Any casual reader of the Bible knows some of his loving promises. But it's a very beneficial exercise from time to time to reflect on these promises. His promises impact our lives every day, whether we realize it or not. Were it not for the promises of Jesus, we would not be here in this place today. In fact, this place wouldn't exist. The very existence of the church is based upon the promises of Jesus. It is those promises that bring us together and keep us in the faith. In fact, the very phrase, in the faith, probably wouldn't exist if it weren't for his promises, because the very faith we are in is faith in Jesus and his promises to us. In ages past, God, the Father, gave promises to men and women of faith who came before us. They cherished those promises and lived on those promises. And those promises saw them through many hardships and difficulties and carried them safely from time on into eternity. Promises like the one given to Abraham in Genesis 26:4, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky. And that promise helped Abraham through many struggles and hardships. Likewise, God the Son made promises to his disciples, and we live on those promises. That's really good news because Jesus called us to follow him and walk in his ways, not for a day or a year, but for the whole of our lives. He said, take up your cross and follow me. He calls us to live a life of self-sacrifice out of love for God and for his beloved ones. He said in John 13:34, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Love makes demands of us. The very nature of love is self-sacrificial, as we put the interests of others ahead of our own. We lay down our lives for others, as Jesus said in John 15:13, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. But Jesus does not make demands of us without giving, right along with those demands, precious promises that make those demands seem easy and light by comparison. So let's take a look at some of these promises. And some promises I merely mentioned last week. Today I want to give more attention to them. Here's a promise. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. John 8:12. So we see right there, some promises have conditions. Here, whoever follows me is the condition, and the promise is that we have the light to walk in rather than darkness. Not physical light, spiritual truth. He offers light to everyone, but only those who are willing to follow him get the benefit from that light and enjoy that light. And that makes total sense because it's Jesus himself that is that light. It's a dark world, spiritually dark, but Jesus is a bright light. And when light meets darkness face to face, light always wins. Think about that. So imagine walking through a dark landscape, but the path before you is well lit because you're following in the footsteps of the one who is lighting the path. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. A beautiful promise. Here's another. Jesus told Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even though he dies. John 11:25. Now, isn't that the mother of all promises? At least it's very close to the mother of all promises. Life after death, life in spite of death. We don't escape physical death, but because of this promise from Jesus, death, instead of being an end of things, becomes the gateway to a new everlasting beginning. But there's more. Here's a promise fit for everyday use. John 14:27-28. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. Notice that Jesus is pointing out that his peace is different from the world's peace. The world can give peace here and there, but the world's peace is temporary. Jesus' peace is everlasting. The world's peace is circumstantial. If circumstances allow, there's peace. If not, no peace. But Jesus gives peace in spite of circumstances because it is based on something more substantial than circumstances. The world's peace is dependent upon the whims of fickle people, but Jesus' peace is dependent upon Jesus, the rock of ages, the one who never changes. The world's peace is a shallow peace. It easily evaporates in the heat of day, but the peace of Jesus is a deep peace, a peace that remains. And Jesus ought to know something about peace. He's the Prince of Peace. I don't know anyone in history other than Jesus to earn the title of Prince of Peace. When he talks of peace, he knows what he's talking about. And he promises, peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. That is what Jesus promised. And because that much is true, he can say what he says next. Therefore, do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. And he says in John 16:33, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And he overcame the world for our sake. He didn't need to overcome the world. He was already Lord. He overcame the world for us, out of love for us. So we've got the Prince of Peace standing alongside us with all his unlimited might and all his unquestioned authority and all his radiant glory and, best of all his everlasting love. All that power and might and glory would not bring us a bit of peace if it weren't for his love. In fact, it would inspire fear, which is pretty much the opposite of peace. But to know that this mighty one has loved us from eternity and will love us for endless ages to come, that gives the heart peace, in spite of all circumstances to the contrary. Now, this doesn't mean we will always feel this peace. We can be rattled just like anyone, and there are plenty of things in the world to rattle us. But when rattled, when stressed out, when troubled, we can look at this promise and we can take comfort in this promise and know that in spite of what we feel at the moment, we have peace in Jesus. Most of all, we have peace with God. And that knowledge will calm our little hearts. The knowledge that we are safe in the arms of the Prince of Peace. As Spurgeon says, if this world becomes too hot to hold us, Jesus will come and take us to himself with the unfailing, everlasting protection of the Prince of Peace. Really, what in the world do we have to fret about? Here's a wonderful promise. Matthew 11:28, Jesus said, come to me, all who labor and are heavily burdened, and I will give you rest. Well, there's a condition here. Come to me. And the promise is rest. Sometimes we carry heavy burdens because we won't come to Jesus and give them to him. But if we do come to Jesus, he promises rest for us. Rest that reaches our inmost places. Deep rest, lasting rest. And not only that, but in the very next verse, he amplifies the promise. He says, verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Take my yoke upon you. That's the condition. Now we have to have the right image in our mind of what he's talking about and what this yoke is. It's not Jesus putting a yoke on us as a driver of a carriage might to his horse. He puts a yoke on the horse, hooks up the carriage, pulls out the whip, and the horse goes pulling the driver around while he sits in comfort and the horse is doing all the work. Well, that doesn't at all fit with Jesus' analogy or with his nature. No, the yoke being referred to is like this. In olden days, and still in some countries now you see this, oxen are yoked, but they are yoked together. They are intimately connected together, so much so that when they go forward together. When they turn together. They keep in step with each other and help carry each other's load, and when they rest, they lay down together. So when Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you," it's a yoke he's already carrying one side of. It's a partnership thing, not a master-slave thing. For after he says, "Take my yoke upon you," he says, "Learn from me," or as another translation puts it, "Let me teach you, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." If Jesus was putting a yoke of slavery on us, he wouldn't in the next breath be telling us how gentle and humble he is. And he certainly wouldn't be using the illustration to talk about rest. We find rest in the yoke of Jesus because he is gentle and humble in heart. Sharing the yoke of a Lord who is harsh and proud in heart would be anything but restful. We probably all know people who have been in churches with leaders that did not emulate the nature of Jesus, and so when that church should have been a restful and delightful thing, it was misery. That's one reason there are so many believers who've given up on church, even in this town. But here we have the promise of Jesus himself that coming to Jesus and service to God alongside Jesus is a pleasant and restful thing. And he promises that he's gentle and humble in heart. As theologian J.C. Ryle puts it, there's only one place in Scripture where Jesus describes his own heart, and it is here. And it's a thing never to be forgotten. So if anyone claims to represent Jesus, but is not gentle and humble in heart, don't believe them. And Jesus says in verse 30, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And the reason Jesus' yoke is easy for us and that burden is light is because Jesus is carrying the heavy part of the yoke. That's just the way he is. "Let me teach you," he says. "I am gentle and humble in heart," he says. "You will find rest for your souls," he says, in this intimate daily relationship of learning of Jesus and working alongside Jesus and keeping in step with Jesus. Finally, for today, in Matthew 4:19, there was a promise given to two fishermen, Simon Peter and his brother Andrew. But it's also a promise to every believer after them. They were fishermen, but he told them, "Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men, fishers of people." Come and follow me was the condition, and I will make you fishers of men was the promise. But just what does that mean? It means he's given us, as his disciples, the authority and the means to call people from darkness to light and from death to life, from estrangement from God to fellowship with God. The authority is the word of Jesus, and the means is the gospel, the good news of Jesus, a powerful, life-changing gospel. Paul said in 2 Timothy 1:10 that Jesus has brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. Life and immortality. Oh, isn't that what everybody longs for? And we have it. And Jesus gave us authority to give it to others. We have the authority and the ability to offer life and immortality to our loved ones and friends and neighbors and co-workers, even complete strangers. Because we have that same wonder-working gospel that the apostles had. That's quite a promise when you think about it. And if you feel inadequate for the task, and who doesn't, just bring them to church. And the Word of God and the Spirit of God and the people of God will do the rest. I've found a friend in Jesus. He's everything to me. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. The lily of the valley, in him alone I see all I need to cleanse and make me fully whole. In sorrow he's my comfort, in trouble he's my stay, and he tells me every care on him to roll. He's the lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. He all my grief has taken and all my sorrows borne. In temptation he's my strong and mighty tower. I've all for him forsaken and all my idols torn from my heart, and now he keeps me by his power. Though all the world forsake me and Satan tempt me sore, through Jesus I shall safely reach the goal. He's the lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. He will never, never leave me, nor yet forsake me here, while I live by faith and do his blessed will. There's a wall of fire about me, I've nothing now to fear. With his manna he my hungry soul shall fill. Then sweeping up to glory to see his blessed face, where rivers of delight shall ever roll. He's the lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. He's the lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul.